If you want to pump your body and expand your mind, there's only one place to go. Mind Pump. Mind Pump. With your hosts, Sal DiStefano, Adam Schaefer, and Justin Andrews.
In this episode, we're going to introduce you to eight of the most controversial strength training exercises and how you might apply them. By the way, this episode is brought to you by a sponsor, Seed. This is the world's best probiotic, hands down. If you want the benefits of a probiotic, go to Seed. Go to seed.com/mindpump. Use the code 25mindpump. Get 25% off. We also have a sale on some programs this month. The Shredded Summer Bundle of Programs and the Bikini Bundle of Programs are both 50% off. If you're interested, go to mapsfitnessproducts.com and then use the code June50 for that discount. All right, here comes the show. Strength training. It's one of the most effective ways to exercise, but not all exercises are created equal. Today, we're going to talk about the eight most controversial strength training exercises, and we're going to determine who they're for, who should do them, and who should not do them.
Ooh, eight, huh?
I like this because there's value in these if done correctly.
That's right.
If applied correctly.
I'm so glad you said that. Strength training is a unique form of exercise in its complexity. There is no other form of exercise that is quite as complex. In other words, there's so many different exercises that could be done for strength training, and there's applications for each of them. And then there are applications that would not be suitable for each of them. So, it's a good topic. It's a very good topic. And some of them are just controversial, where a lot of people say avoid them. And oftentimes when I hear that, what's really being said is I just don't know how to use these properly or who they're for.
These are all like your common knee-jerk reaction exercises that people will hammer if they see a video or see somebody performing these in the gym. They'll come up and be like, you're going to hurt yourself.
Yes.
Yeah, I think I learned that the hard way as a young, arrogant trainer who thought he knew better. Trying to tell people what was right or wrong, or that's not a safe or a good exercise. And then finding out that this person had a very specific goal that made a lot of sense to be doing that movement. And so I always taught my trainers, like, don't assume that person doesn't have a very specific goal that movement applies to. And you may think it's dangerous or silly or dumb or worthless, but that's the cool thing about, you know, strength training is there's basically a application from damn near every movement you've ever seen in the gym.
That's right.
And the question becomes, are they using it correctly for that? And is that the best approach for what they're trying to design?
Totally.
And so many times people are doing these movements that I'm sure you're going to list, haven't seen them. But then their desired outcome doesn't align with that. I think that's where this conversation is probably.
And the risk reward is like not worth it in certain instances when it's not applied correctly.
That's right. All right, we'll start with the first one, the behind the neck press. This one is interesting because this one went from being like a bodybuilding staple in the 70s, 80s, and 90s to suddenly becoming like leprosy, like everybody's away, like runs away from this exercise.
Totally.
But I mean, back in the 90s, like this was how bodybuilders, they almost all did behind the neck presses until people said, oh, that's dangerous, don't do that. So they stopped doing them. Now the critique is that it places the shoulder joint in this really extreme, externally rotated position and it's abducted. That's true. It is true. Yeah. It does require far more shoulder mobility and stability.
It already has to be there.
Yes. It requires more of your shoulder and all the muscles that support, because the shoulder joint is pretty complex, right? You got the humerus and then you got the scapula and they all have to kind of move together in the right way. It requires far more mobility and stability than a standard overhead press, which also requires a decent amount of mobility. So I get the critique, but that's also one of the pluses, I think, of it. It's like if you don't exercise this motion, you tend to lose it. And I know this because I was this. Like I did behind the neck presses as a kid. Then I became a personal trainer. My certification said don't do it, so I stopped doing it. Then in my 20s, I saw Mario Puzanowski. He was a strongman competitor. And he used to be an Olympic lifter, and he literally had the bar sitting on his traps and would press it up.
Do like a push press from behind the head.
Yeah. And I thought, this is weird. Like Olympic lifters do this all the time. And I went back to trying to do them, and it took me a long time to get back to being able to do it because I had lost the mobility. But once I did, it was like just a great exercise for shoulder development.
Yeah. And that external rotation, it's even more challenging these days because of all the forces against us with daily habits and what we do all day long. And so I understand the caution and concern because already our shoulders just aren't in a good anatomical position to start. And so getting, you know, good posture first is obviously that's the main thing we need to focus on in stabilizing the joint. But once you have stabilization, we can express you know, that external rotation, have like solid stability with that, getting strong in that position. It solidifies it, bulletproofs it. Totally. Yes. Like you don't have that, you know, the opportunity for all of a sudden now where I'm getting impingements and my shoulder is like, you know, in that less optimal position where I'm going to get more shearing stress.
The truth is every exercise that you don't have mobility and stability in is dangerous.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Curl.
Yes.
Can be that way.
If you lack the mobility and stability in a joint that you're using to perform a movement, it's now dangerous.
That's right.
So this idea that we eliminate exercises for that versus going, hey, this exercise can be dangerous if we don't, therefore we should train mobility and stability in this joint so that you can do these movements.
Yeah.
Now, the thing that I love about this and any movement that falls in this category is that once you put the work in to have the mobility and stability, continuing just to perform that exercise
keeps it. Yep.
And so that was like a big aha moment for me as a trainer because I fell into this category. In fact, my first national certification said, do not teach behind the neck presses. Like that was a no, that you don't tell clients that, or you tell clients not to do that. And then when I realized that like that any exercise without mobility and stability could be dangerous and that we should train our body in a way that we have mobility and stability in all joints in all ranges that we can, that's reasonable, especially movements that you could potentially do inside the gym or anywhere else, I went, oh my God. And then when I did the work in to get there and realized, oh wow, these great movements that we tend to tell people not to do, if you can get to a place where you can do them safely, and then you just make sure you incorporate them periodically in your training routine, you keep great stability and mobility in that joint. That's right. Like, that's crazy.
Now, I'll tell you this. Here's why bodybuilders used to love them. If you want a shoulder pump, the shoulder pump you get from behind the neck presses is insane, precisely because of the criticisms, the external rotated and abducted position. Like, you are activating your lateral delts, even your rear delts, holding yourself into position. Again, this is with someone who can do this safely because they have the mobility. The pump that this produces in the shoulders, that's why bodybuilders used to love this exercise. Now, Olympic lifters love it because when you're pressing a weight overhead like they do, you want the most vertical position possible.
You don't want any forward momentum.
Or you're done.
Yeah,
you're
dead. It's all vertical.
And they do this a lot. In fact, the way they do it is
back.
They do an extreme version of it where it's like it's like they're doing they're
pushing it backwards almost.
Yes, 100%.
Yeah.
Next up is the upright row. The criticism, of course, is pulling a barbell or dumbbells close to the body. It's like lots of internal rotation of the shoulders. You risk impingement. There was a study in 2003 that linked it to certain issues in the shoulder joint itself. Again, these studies are based on everyday people who, you know, you're going to have people doing it wrong, people having poor stability, mobility. This is another exercise that bodybuilders have loved for decades and decades and decades. Mm-hmm. I love this exercise. This is a staple in my workouts. And with my clients, one of my goals, there's lots of goals I have with my clients with exercises, but one of them was to be able to do these and not have pain and feel good. And when I could do that, I knew their shoulders were healthy. But again, bodybuilder favorite, I think this exercise was more one of the exercises that was responsible for my shoulders getting really round. I just noticed that when I did these really well, I got these really, really round looking shoulders.
Well, I mean, it's a great way to heavy load the lateral head too, because if you do traditional lateral raises, it's a long lever. And so you can only load that so much.
Mm-hmm. Before it turns into like a swing or something.
Yeah, before it turns into like another muscle completely overtaking the movement. And so, you know, this is a exercise that you can target that part of the shoulder and actually load it. And so long as you have the mobility and stability, it's very safe to load and get after it. So it was a staple movement for me.
It's so crazy too, because this was another bodybuilding favorite for decades. And if you look at old bodybuilding videos from like the 70s and even the 80s, these giants had amazing shoulder mobility. You don't see this as often today, but back then, like you watch Arnold do behind the neck presses and upright rows, and he had incredible shoulder mobility, and he was really well developed. Obviously, he was a bodybuilder, but it's because they practiced these exercises. Like you take these exercises out and you build these big shoulders without practicing these kind of movements, then they become dangerous because you don't have the ability to do them.
And maybe one of the dangers or fears on this too is the mistake of, because to the point I was making that you can load them, is that you don't have the proper mobility and stability, and you go right to loading it really heavy the first time. Because the other way to also
address, treat them with respect.
Yeah, is exactly, is just like you should almost any first movement for the first time is, start light and controlled, and make sure you do own the range of motion and the ability and the stability in that, and then eventually load it. But maybe that's why it gets maybe a bad rap, is because you can first time, if you've never done it, you can go grab a decent amount of weight, you know, and then go do it. You just
start swinging the hell out of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Next up, this one's very controversial because people do them wrong or for the wrong reasons.
Yep.
Kipping pull-up. Now, I've definitely criticized these.
Yes.
Because people have replaced pull-ups with kipping pull-ups, but they were never meant. The real history of a kipping pull-up.
Gymnastics.
Is, yes.
It's a transitional move.
It was never meant to replace a pull-up. Like if you want to do pull-ups to develop your lats and your biceps, there's a way you do them. If you're doing a kipping pull-up, this is a skill. It's what it is. Essentially a skill. It's a transitional exercise. Getting yourself up and over a bar. I think that they should be performed not to fatigue, like any explosive movement. Like that's a mistake. You start doing them till you fatigue, that's when you get issues. You train them explosively, and it is a skill. And if you get good at these, like I'll tell you, I don't practice these, but I could probably benefit from practicing something like this, because I could see that there's definitely some holes with my upper body explosiveness and coordination, because I don't do stuff like this. So I could see that value.
It was never meant to be multiple repetitions back to back to back. It was to get you into a position where now we can perform a dip, now we can perform a lot of these other, like, you know, grueling type move. And again, too, these are people that have, you know, spent years and years developing the kind of strength to isometrically hold and support and build that kind of stability around the shoulder joint. So then the general public, you know, kind of going in a CrossFit gym where we're promoting this. So that way too, this is like another way that we can increase the number of reps from a competition perspective. So for me, that was sort of the disconnect, was like the value of it really is to be able to get you into a position where now we're working on, from a top position down, not necessarily to put all that velocity and ballistic stress like all around the shoulder joint. It's actually ridiculous.
So, okay. Yeah. I don't know what the full list is looking like. And so I'm not sure if the desired outcome is for us to agree on these movements or not, because this is not a movement I'm a fan of at all.
No.
Like, yes, I can make the case of having the mobility and stability and strength to be able to do it, is that's a good thing if you can and do it in a healthy way. But, unless you're a gymnast, I would never train this with one of my clients. I would never take on a client and be like,
tears
and think of all the array of potential goals that you've trained.
Mm-hmm.
Between the three of us, pretty sure we've trained them all. There's not a client who fits in that category. It's like, oh, you know what we're going to make sure we include is kipping pull-ups. That just, unless they were a gymnast, which I have trained gymnasts, and absolutely that's something that they would do. But everybody else, I don't see the application.
That's because most of our clients were everyday people. But let's say you had a client who
was a gymnast. Yes.
No, not just a gymnast, but let's say they're really fit. And they want to like explore different movements, and they're like, like a muscle up.
Yeah, but
like,
when you teach
how do you practice?
Wouldn't you teach them some sort of an Olympic movement?
Strict muscle up. That's the thing.
Right, but I could see this technique being taught as a way to coordinate your body.
Mm-hmm.
I could see the value. I'm not saying I would use it necessarily, but I could see the value, because there is a value, but it's kind of narrow. Right, is what you're saying. It's a narrow value. You're limiting it to gymnast.
Yeah, because the other ones that we've talked about so far, there's a much broader appeal to them.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Like absolutely. Going back to the upright rows, for example, like great shoulder development for that. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? And if you were to compare the two of them, relatively safe compared to that.
Yeah. I could see this as a stepping stone, first off, not to fatigue, but as a way to get someone to be able to do the first muscle up, to learn how to get their body to swing up. That's kind of that first step.
It's almost like, what do you call that one squat where you pick the barbell up from the side?
Oh, yeah.
And you bring it up here.
Yeah.
It would be just doing that a bunch of times.
Yeah.
You know, like that's a transitionary move.
That's right.
That's really high risk.
Yeah.
So why would I repeat that a bunch of times? Yeah. It makes no sense.
Well, the problem.
Not to mention, even your argument to get it to do a muscle up, like muscle ups got popular because of the stupid Instagram.
Yeah.
Before that, like that was never a thing. It's like, again, another gymnast type of like cool move. But it's like what your client doing a muscle up? What
it's so advanced that I probably wouldn't have had a client doing it. But I can
climb up over a fence.
But yes. Yeah. But
yeah.
Look,
yeah, you run from the cops.
Yeah, that's
your desired outcome.
Well, I could see the value. Stupid. Sure. I could see. Hey, John, let me teach you this. I could see the value.
I'm gonna rob a bank next week.
I could see the value in a muscle up because it's coordinating pulling and pushing all in one movement. And there's not very many exercises that do that.
Muscle ups. Yeah, it's really hard.
They are really hard. And it's a upper body coordinated strength skill that I think is really awesome. I think it's hard. And yes, it's a very narrow scope. I can't think of a single client. Maybe Doug would have been someone that we trained to try to get here because he was so consistent.
Yeah.
But my point with this is, and you know, the thing is, CrossFit really bastardized this because they turned it into its own exercise and they did it to like,
well, I guess the reason why I'm pushing back so much right now, I can see the next two that are coming up, and I already see
the only one I have contention.
Yeah. With. I was going to say this. I can see application.
I put
for
that there on purpose.
you wanted us to get all fired. Okay,
cause I'm like, there are a lot of these other ones. Like I can make a case for a lot of different clients that I train that either we did do these movements or I would want them to work towards that. I just didn't have that. Yeah. And I don't even see anybody that would want to do that until the movement of CrossFit came out. Then of course it becomes like a thing that people want to learn how to do. And even like the muscle up was not a thing that people wanted to do before until it got popular on Instagram.
Well, the original muscle ups with rings. Yep. That's what they were. Pull yourself up to the rings to press yourself up.
Yeah.
So. All right. Next up, barbell good mornings. This one's gained a little bit of popularity, but for a while there, this was like nobody would touch these.
I know, great.
It requires really good technique and form. You got to really maintain your spine in this nice, strong, stable position. But man, it is a great hamstring and butt exercise. Who's popularized this? Female fitness influencers. They've made this popular because they're so interested in developing their backside.
They have made this more popular. Yet this has been a long time bodybuilding movement.
Though. Oh, powerlifting.
This is in Arnold's book.
Oh yeah,
yeah. So this is not new. We know this is great for this movement.
West
like,
Side had it.
Yes, you can like a super brand new person. Dangerous exercise. But a great exercise to get people.
I mean, it teaches that thoracic, like you know, scapular retracted, thoracic stability, lumbar stability.
Great now core hinging, your core strength to do that. Your posture to do that, and then the posterior chain. I mean, it's just.
Yeah.
And then it takes also the like, have you ever had somebody who wants to develop hamstrings, but then have issues with hands or wrist or something like that? So because it can't hold on to like a normal stiff legged deadlift, like you can load it on the back like that. So. Yeah, no, I find this to be...
Powerlifters love this for a long time.
Great movement.
And you know, bodybuilders in the 40s this was actually one of the exercises they would show off their strength. So you'd see these guys lift tremendous weight way back in the 1940s. One of my favorite exercises for the posterior chain. And it didn't, until recently, you didn't see these in gyms at all. In fact, if you tried doing this in a gym... When I was a trainer.
Would stop you right away.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
People come up to you.
I think you're doing a bad squat.
Like, hey, you're going to snap your back in half.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
All right. Next up, box jumps. Box jumps are controversial because...
they've been bastardized. They're awesome.
They're great what they're for.
When used correctly, they are awesome. Problem is,
nobody does.
No. If you go in the gym... Right now, if you're listening right now, you can look around. There's probably somebody doing box jumps right now. Wrong. Yeah. There's a 50-50 shot. If you're in the gym right now listening to this podcast, look around. There's somebody doing box jumps.
And 90% of them are doing
Yeah, they're doing high reps, sloppy, and you know, for time fast, or for repetition,
fatigue.
Yeah.
The
yeah.
box jumps became a filler exercise. So there's a lot of exercises that that bad trainers use as fillers when they're creating a circuit. When they're creating a circuit, they like to think of hard stuff to do. Mm-hmm. So you go do this over here for
burpees,
a minute.
Box jumps.
Yes, like yeah. they just throw in these filler extra. Like another one is where you hold on the bench and jump back and forth over it. You know?
Oh
like,
God, I haven't seen that in a long
they're
time.
They're just coming up with like stuff to do just to get people sweaty. And for some reason, someone thought a box jump, which is like you just took an explosive power movement, which that's what it's good for.
High skill.
Like if and the way you practice them is you jump as hard as you can, explode, come down, wait.
Soft landing.
Soft landing, wait. Wait until you're recover, ready to explode fully. Again.
Yeah.
Fatigue makes this exercise not effective and also makes it now something stupid. You might as well do jumping jacks if you're just going to do this to fatigue. And that's what trainers did. So you go into gyms, and it was just a hard exercise for people to do. You
know, people are just eating shins and flying across the gym. Yes.
But box jumps, you know, plyos have been around for a long time. The Soviets really pioneered this kind of training for their sprinters and athletes. And this is a great way to teach the body to express strength in a fast way.
You ever check out their training?
No.
Oh, yeah. Tom Marinovich. Yeah. Crazy amounts of like plyometrics.
Football, Tom Marinovich? Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. Wow. Yeah.
You should check out his training sometime.
Now, related to me, you know that?
Huh?
Is he? You know, they're related to me. Yeah. So his brother, Paul, is married to my stepbrother's mom.
No way.
Yeah, oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Wow, small world.
Yeah, he's a local guy.
Yeah, he's a local from over Riverbank, that direction, teacher over there. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Wow. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Now, I will say this. I think box jumps regressed way down have some value for everyday people because this is a fact, and I know this personally. You don't practice jumping, you lose a skill.
Yeah.
You suddenly lose a skill. Like, you'll jump off a curb or something, and you're like, ouch. What happened? I can't do this well anymore. Now, what this looks like for, you know, beginner clients is you'll jump in place and you'll practice something like that. And then the box is super, super low. You're not trying to see how high that you can jump, but rather practice the skill.
And not trying to do 50 reps.
Yes. So, but it's valuable for everyday people because if you stop jumping, you'll forget your body.
I mean, I guess you would, because this is probably almost a category by itself of like all plyometrics.
All of them.
Like all plyometrics can be amazing, but most often done incorrectly.
Totally.
Yeah. So, I mean, you throw ice skaters, you throw all these tuck jumps, you throw all kinds of like cool plyo moves.
Those are all filler exercises in trainer circuits.
Yeah. That's a problem is that they could have been really good movements or can be really good movements, but they've been bastardized by the industry to just get people tired between other exercises. So
I mean, just to put it differently, when you see trainers do this, where they have like 10 exercises put together with all these plyo exercises, you could replace the way that they're doing it. You could replace every exercise with jumping jacks. You could have 10 jumping jack stations and they get the same benefit.
Get the same result.
How funny is that?
Yeah, no, if I'm doing box jumps with an athlete, because that's typically who I'd be doing that with, that is the only thing we're doing.
Yeah.
And we are taking powerlifting extended periods of time in breaks. And I'm like breaking down what I saw. Like, okay, look at your hips were too low here. You need to pull your arms back, explode with your, like, I'm watching every time they do one, then they, while they're resting, I'm talking about what I saw. Like, you rocked forward too much on the balls of your feet. You're on your heels too much, or, you know, your arms didn't come back. You know, like, I'm critiquing the entire movement and getting them to try. And each time they go back to that jump,
just create that power.
They got higher and more explosive each time because I made minor adjustments to how they loaded the body before they exploded. Like, that's how a box jump is taught. It's not taught in repetitions and definitely not taught in repetitions with something else. That's stupid. Right.
Next up is the behind the neck pull down. This is another one of those bodybuilding exercises that was a favorite. You could not find a bodybuilding article in the 90s or 80s that did not include like a bodybuilding back workout that did not include behind the neck pull downs. This is what they did. And then suddenly it became like the most unpopular back exercise ever because why? It strains the shoulders, wrist rotator cuff damage, impingement, blah, blah, blah. I love behind the neck pull downs because it really helps maintain shoulder mobility.
Strengthens, reinforces being that able, position of be, being like externally rotated.
That's right. External rotation, pulling down, getting my scapula to rotate down and in while retracted. Like, you stop training that, it goes away.
It will.
It goes away.
You'll get weak.
That's right.
Well, the good part, this goes hand in hand with the behind the head presses. If you can do that, you'll do this.
That's right.
Like, so, you know, again, if you get, if you gain the stability and mobility in order to do that in your shoulders, then both these movements, just keep them in your routine and you'll forever keep that ability. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't have to like actively work on mobility and stability all this time. It, you just do those two movements periodically in your routine. Mm-hmm. And you'll keep incredible shoulder mobility.
I still do these probably, you know, if I work out my back twice in a week, once for sure. Mm-hmm. So at least 3 days, three times out of a month, do I train behind the neck pull down?
I mean, I like to warm up the lat pull down like that.
Oh,
just
yeah.
Light and do it, yep. Just to keep that, yep, ability.
The problem is, I think when people like force the position.
Oh yeah,
when they don't go forward. Yeah, their head's protruding too far and. They haven't done a lot of the work to be able to get those shoulders fully externally rotated. And so it's like,
it looks like a curl.
Yeah. They're looking for, they're kind of shrimping their posture, yeah, to make it work. It's not for you. You don't
great
own it yet.
Great priming movement for both of those prone cobras.
Oh yeah.
Are
yeah.
A great way to prime
wall press.
Yeah. Or wall press are great movements to prime, to get you in the position to both.
That reminds me, I remember now one of the contributing factors to why this fell out of popularity in the, I want to say the late '90s, there was a story of a man who was doing just obviously terrible form, too much weight. The cable snapped. He slammed the bar down on his neck and got paralyzed.
Oh,
God. And so everybody was like, don't ever do this.
Literally the worst case scenario possible.
Slammed the bar on his
neck. Yeah, because he was yanking it and, you know, going forward. Oh, and then the bar came down and he hit himself.
Horrible.
In the neck. Now nobody wants to do it. If that happens, that's super rare. Next up, Roman chair sit-ups. So Roman chair sit-ups, this is where you have, your hips are essentially supported.
Now, most people do hyperextensions on these.
Yes, okay. Yes. This was a favorite bodybuilders in the 70s. Arnold loved doing these. Wrestlers loved doing these.
So are you sitting reverse then on
you it? Are.
Okay. So the average, because Justin and I were talking about this when you mentioned this, it was like, I always thought the Roman chair was a different machine.
It was the leg raise.
Yeah. Chair you hold, and then you bring your knees up. And, but it's not that.
But we're wrong. It's the one you're talking about. And then what most people use the Roman chair for are for hyperextensions.
That's right. So okay. You go backwards on it, anchor your feet.
Yeah.
Now, here's why they're controversial, because you could turn these into hip flexor blasters. Like, if you're not focusing the abs, you're not extending and then flexing at the spine. You're just doing, you know, psoas raises essentially. And yeah, that'll hurt your back. That'll definitely hurt your back. And a good amount of strength is required to do these. If you don't have really strong core muscles, then this is not a go-to starter exercise. But if they are strong and you can do these right, man, these develop the abs like almost nothing else. It's a great exercise.
Obviously the theory of that is just because the range of motion,
gnarly range of motion with no support. Like, you're leaning back, there's air behind you.
Yeah.
You know, so you can see how somebody will hurt themselves if they don't have.
Yeah. So far the exercise that like, this would be the second least I would use. Hmm. So if you were to go,
you would go decline bench.
Yeah. There's just like a lot of things I would do first. And that, although I could see somebody who has great, control stability there and they really want to develop abs and like I could see maybe working this way, where I see nothing where I would ever do a kipping unless I was a very sport specific person. Mm-hmm. So but I would if I had to order these, this would be the second least.
Typically you'd have something supporting you know, your lower back on just as a precursor.
Well, because what I'm also the game I'm playing as you're going through these is like, go through all the people you ever train and all the goals.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to think of a person that has ever told me a goal where I'm like, oh, I have a movement we gotta do where that would surface to the top. Some of these other ones, they absolutely would, you know, mm-hmm. would go there. This one's,
you know, what's funny about the Roman chair sit-ups in the 70s, like Arnold was famous for this. They would do this for time, not for reps. So they do Roman chair sit-ups for 5 minutes, and they on. I know, isn't that funny?
I mean, that's an example too, isn't this? You would still, isn't that what you would call what Rocky is doing off the hay?
Oh, wait, hanging upside down. Yeah. I mean, no, but I mean, that's also a great. I don't know where you'd be able to do that.
It's kind of like that.
Yeah, similar.
You get those boots where you hang upside down, like on the
And
then you the do gravity boots.
Way. Yeah, gravity boots.
I've never done those. All right. The last one is by far the most controversial. In fact, if you do this in a gym, I would love reaction videos. I would love seeing people who can do these properly to do them and then film the reactions. So it's called a Jefferson curl. And what a Jefferson curl looks like.
For sure, most controversial.
It looks like a terrible deadlift.
Yeah. Yeah.
It looks like you're trying to hurt your back.
It's like, yeah.
And essentially what you're doing is you're holding a barbell. And you're
on my spine.
And you are literally deliberately flexing the spine, literally deliberately rounding your back on the way down and coming all the way up. Yeah. Now, this was a wrestler staple for Greco-Roman wrestlers, especially Soviet wrestlers. And they did this Zercher style. They would stand on a block and they would Zercher it, and they'd go all the way down, all the way up. Wow. Now, why? I mean, in Greco-Roman, you're picking up
dead weight.
Dudes off the floor.
Moving weight.
And that's what you look like when you're picking them up off the floor. Now, the risk here is if you let your spine support you, if you allow your end range of motion of your discs support you, you're going to hurt yourself. Yeah. So there's a high level of stability and control that's required to be able to load this. But this is an exercise that, like, you know,
you gotta have high body IQ to pull this off for sure.
Yeah, most controversial for sure on the list, maybe, or at least up there for sure with kipping. Although what I know now and understand, because this is not something I trained. I did not train clients on this. But what I understand now, I could actually see myself doing this with more, and not who you would think. Like, I would take advanced age people that are, but with
no weight. That's right.
And just a little bit. Just
teaching them how to articulate each vertebrae.
Because 100%. Of the benefits of you being able to articulate every vertebrae slowly and controlled like that.
Totally.
And I would just regress it to like nothing, right? Like, and then eventually holding like 10 pounds.
Yep.
And then if I got that client to be able to do that with a decent amount of weight, boy, are you really protecting them.
I was not familiar with the Jefferson curl until later in my career. But I did exactly what you said with clients. When I had people who were at advanced age and they had back pain and we get them to a point where we could do certain things, I would have them reach down with their hands and I'd have them articulate their spine all the way down until we reached a point where they're like, oh, that's a little iffy. And then I'd have them roll back up. And here's what happened over time. They got lower. They were able over months, right? They were able to go lower and lower and lower and no back pain.
Yeah. So, bulletproofs it. Yeah, and then you do the opposite of the perfect push-up where you're articulated up each
perfect individual. Sit-up, you mean?
Yeah, perfect sit-up is what I meant.
Yes, that's what I mean. Like, perfect sit-up and Jefferson curl to me are movements that I didn't use a lot in my career early on, purely out of fear and what I thought was so dangerous. But looking back now, I go like, oh, I would just regress the shit out of that. Totally. And actually could see a wide application for a lot of people for just overall safety and protecting them. You just have, it is highly dangerous. But when we look at the list of things that you listed off today, like you
can regress this.
Yep. Yes. I see more application for this than some of the other ones.
It's so protective once you get strong.
Well, you know what?
Even though it's the most controversial.
And what they teach people, which is terrible, is, you have back pain. Don't move that way anymore. So gradually over time,
you're more vulnerable. Just completely prune it, right?
Yeah.
That much more susceptible.
It's like, oh, you got knee pain, stop squatting. Oh, you got this, stop pressing. It's like, oh my God, you're going to lose that mobility.
What about when I have to?
That's right. And then you're totally toast. Screwed. No, 100. That's so it's funny because I did this movement with people, but we didn't load it just to be able to articulate
squatting. Yeah.
But then later, like I said, I found it by watching videos of these wrestlers and they would hold them in, like I said, in these Zercher positions and they would load them. But that's what you do in those wrestling matches. You're picking people off the ground.
Oh, yeah. You're scooping them off the ground.
That's
which is a really low position. Yeah. I actually thought you were going to add sissy squat to the
list. Oh, just
because
you could have
that. People's looking, you know, from outside perspective, like in the stress.
I got to say,
they would say.
I got to say, that. I think we're responsible for bringing that exercise back.
For sure.
It's when we started the podcast, nobody knew what it was.
I didn't know what it was until you introduced it to me.
Yeah. And now
I was already over 10 years of my career and didn't know what the hell that was. And then you showed it to me. And then I remember attempting it and then the learning curve and then getting good at it. And then I went, oh, wow. I fell in love with them.
Yep.
Yeah.
So
I prefer them, especially to
extension. Oh yeah,
and I see them now. I see people doing them.
You know, I used to. This is so funny because I remember I was heat of bodybuilding when you guys all got together. I would hold the leg extension machine to balance to myself. To do it. So I'm sure people are like, what the fuck?
You're using the wrong, what are you doing?
I totally used to do that. So funny. I love those.
That's a good honorable mention.
That is a great honorable mention for sure right there.
Look, if you like us, come find us on Instagram. Justin is at Mind Pump Justin. I'm at Mind Pump DeStefano. Adam's at Mind Pump Adam.
Thank you for listening to Mind Pump. If your goal is to build and shape your body, dramatically improve your health and energy, and maximize your overall performance, check out our discounted RGB Super Bundle at mindpumpmedia.com. The RGB Super Bundle includes MAPS Anabolic, MAPS Performance, and MAPS Aesthetic, 9 months of phased expert exercise programming designed by Sal, Adam, and Justin to systematically transform the way your body looks, feels, and performs. With detailed workout blueprints and over 200 videos, the RGB Super Bundle is like having Sal, Adam, and Justin as your own personal trainers, but at a fraction of the price. The RGB Super Bundle has a full 30-day money-back guarantee, and you can get it now plus other valuable free resources at mindpumpmedia.com. If you enjoy this show, please share the love by leaving us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes and by introducing Mind Pump to your friends and family. We thank you for your support, and until next time, this is Mind Pump.